Okay, let's talk about something that, well, it impacts pretty much everyone who drives or might drive or even just sees cars around. We're diving into what happens to vehicles at the end of their life.
Yeah, the whole end-of-life vehicle world. It's surprisingly complex.
Absolutely. I mean, think about the numbers. Millions upon millions of vehicles hitting the end of the road every year, just in the EU. And, you know, countless more globally.
And right now, a lot of that material, that value, it gets lost. Ends up as waste or maybe low-grade recycling at best.
But the big question is, could we change that? Could cars really become part of a functioning circular economy?
Well, that's exactly the ambition behind this major new legislative push happening in Europe. Our focus today is the EU's proposed new regulation. It's all about circularity requirements for vehicle design and, crucially, managing these end-of-life vehicles, or ELVs.
And it's not just a minor tweak, is it? It's a big overhaul.
Oh, definitely. It's designed to replace the old directives, some of which have been around for, over 20 years? This is a single, comprehensive regulation aiming to bring everything up to date.
Right, and to really get our heads around it, we've looked at a whole range of stuff. The official proposals, the impact assessment.
Which are pretty dense.
Yeah. But also, perspectives from the people actually doing this stuff. Car manufacturers, suppliers, the dismantlers and recyclers on the ground, insurance companies.
And we've even looked beyond the EU, right? Seeing what's happening in places like the US and Japan, plus getting insights into the used parts market, which is becoming huge.
Exactly. So the mission here is basically to pull out the key bits from all these sources. We want to help you understand what this proposal is really about.
Yeah, what are the main challenges, the opportunities, and why does it actually matter whether you're in the industry or just, you know, curious about how we deal with old cars?
Okay, so first things first. Why now? Why this big push for a new ELV regulation?
It really stems from the big picture EU strategies, the European Green Deal, the Circular Economy Action Plan. Vehicles are singled out as a priority.
Because they're just such a massive source of materials.
Exactly. The core idea is to cut down waste dramatically, push for really high quality recycling, and actually get those recycled materials back into new vehicles. Plus, you know, broader goals like decarbonization, less reliance on virgin resources, developing that secondary materials market.
And you mentioned it replaces older rules. It pulls them together.
Precisely. It merges two older directives, one from 2005 on type approval, basically, designing cars for recyclability, and the original ELV directive from 2000, which was more focused on the waste management side collection treatment targets.
So putting it all into one regulation sounds simpler, maybe?
In theory. But it also means the requirements get tougher, and importantly, it covers more types of vehicles now.
Okay, let's get into the main goals then. What are the big headlines in this proposal?
They lay out six key objectives. First, design circular, embedding circularity right from the design and production stage.
Makes sense. Start at the beginning.
Second, use recycled content. This is a big one, forcing the use of more recycled stuff, especially plastics, steel, aluminum, and those critical raw materials, CRMs.
Okay.
Third, treat better. Improving the quality of how ELVs are actually taken apart and processed to keep more value. Fourth, collect more. Trying to stop vehicles just vanishing, you know, going missing from the official system.
The traceability issue. We'll come back to that, I bet.
Definitely. Fifth is harmonized incentives for extended producer responsibility, EPR. Putting more clear responsibility on the manufacturers.
Right. The producer pays principal.
And finally, cover more vehicles. This is that scope expansion bringing in motorcycles, buses, lorries, trailers. Though that specific part gets phased in 5 years after the regulation kicks in.
That scope change alone sounds like a massive practical shift for the industry. But let's stick with the design part for a moment. What specific rules are there for making cars more circular from the start?
So, Chapter 2 lays this out. The recycled content targets are probably the most talked about. The proposal says new vehicles need at least 25% recycled plastics overall.
25%. Okay.
But here's the kicker. 25% of that 25%, so doing the math, 6.25% of the total plastic has to come from closed-loop recycling.
Meaning plastic recovered from other end-of-life vehicles.
Exactly. Plastic from old cars going back into new cars. And they're planning studies to look at similar targets for steel, aluminum, and those CRMs, like rare earths and electronics or battery materials.
Okay, so material targets are key. What about, like, banned substances or making things easier to take apart?
Yep, both are in there. There's a move to modernize the rules on hazardous substances, linking up with other regs like the battery regulation involving bodies like ECHA, the European Chemicals Agency.
Right.
And crucially, new rules on design for removal. Manufacturers have to design certain key components so they can actually be removed easily. Think high voltage batteries and electric motors and EVs. That's huge.
Especially for reuse or specialized recycling, I imagine.
For sure. And just to clarify, that specific removal obligation, for now, applies to the cars and vans already covered, not immediately to the new categories like buses or trucks that BITS phased for them.
Got it. So the manufacturers have to design differently, but they also have new reporting duties, right?
Oh, yeah. Chapter 3 spells those out. They'll need to declare in detail the recycled content for plastics, steel, aluminum, magnesium, even rare earth elements.
Wow, that's specific.
And they need a circularity strategy. They have to report on their processes, the treatment tech used for their cars at end of life, their progress, future plans, design changes. It's pretty comprehensive.
And getting information to the dismantlers and recyclers seems absolutely vital for this to work.
It's fundamental. If the guys taking the car apart don't know how or what's in it, the whole thing falls down. So manufacturers must provide detailed info.
Like instructions.
Exactly. How to safely remove EV batteries, motors, things needing special depollution, identifying reusable parts, parts with CRMs, digitally coded parts, all of it.
And does that info requirement apply to the new vehicle types straight away?
Yes. Interestingly, Article 11 on information requirements does apply to the buses, lorries, motorcycles, etc. right from the start, even if some of the physical removal rules for them come later. And there's labeling requirements, too, for parts.
Makes sense. Yeah. Gotta know what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's design and production. What about the other end? When the car is actually, you know, done, how does the proposal change collection and treatment?
Chapter 4, Part 2 tackles this. There's a definite push for more reuse, things like requiring labels and warranties for reused parts, even if sold internationally.
A warranty on a used part? That could be significant.
It could. And mandating that repair quotes must include options using reused, remanufactured, or refurbished parts. That's trying to build confidence and demand.
That feels like a real attempt to legitimize and boost that used parts market.
It does. Plus, there are new rules like banning the mixing of ELV waste with other streams like WEEE electronic waste or packaging to keep the material fractions cleaner.
Good for recycling quality.
Definitely. Also, a ban on landfilling untreated bits from ELVs unless they're totally inert. And a brand new target, 30% material recycling specifically for plastics from ELVs.
So a dedicated plastic recycling goal. And the actual dismantling process, is that changing?
Yes, they're mandating a more, let's say, careful approach. Key thing is requiring the removal of certain parts and fluids before the car goes into the big shredder.
Why before?
Better depollution, easier reuse or remanufacturing of those removed parts, better chance of capturing those valuable CRMs, and ultimately cleaner shredded material output like steel or aluminum scrap. It just makes sense.
And those big overall recycling targets, the 85% recycling and 95% reuse recovery, right. Are they still there?
Yep. Those headline figures from the old directive remain unchanged. The focus now is more on the quality of that recycling, promoting reuse, and hitting those specific material targets like plastics.
Okay, let's get into the money side. Extended Producer Responsibility, EPR.
Yeah.
Putting the financial onus on manufacturers. How does that work?
Right. Chapter 4, Part 1. It basically says manufacturers are responsible for the costs of managing their vehicles when they become waste. They can do this individually or, more likely, join collective schemes, pooling resources, or a mix.
Kind of like we see with packaging or electronics already.
Exactly. And it tries to align with the battery regulation too, especially where the car maker is also the battery maker for EVs.
So what specific costs does this EPR cover?
Article 20 lists them. Collection costs, depollution, the actual treatment process, minus any money they make back selling spare parts or recycled materials.
Okay, so net costs.
Net costs plus things like running awareness campaigns, handling the certificate of destruction paperwork, and reporting data.
Now, this is where things get a bit spicy. One of our sources mentioned a big investigation.
Yeah, that was quite something. The European Commission found that a group of major car manufacturers were involved in an illegal cartel for over 15 years.
15 years. What were they doing? Fixing car prices.
No, not new car prices. It was specifically about coordinating how they handled the costs associated with ELV management. The source suggests this led to really unfavorable contracts for dismantlers in some places, like Poland.
Wow, that really casts a shadow over the whole idea of fair financial responsibility, doesn't it? If the system was potentially rigged for so long.
It certainly highlights the need for really clear rules and strong oversight, making sure EPR works as intended, not just on paper.
The proposal also talks about fee modulation. What's that?
Right. Article 21. If manufacturers use a collective system, the fees they pay in should be adjusted, modulated based on how easy or hard their car is to recycle at the end of its life.
So penalize hard-to-recycle designs, reward good ones.
That's the theory. Incentivize circular design. But the sources raise big questions about how practical this is. Think about the complexity, the data needed, the admin burden.
Could it be a bureaucratic nightmare?
That's the concern. Some argue the benefit might not outweigh the cost, and maybe simpler differentiation is better. Like just having different fee categories for cars versus trucks, or small cars versus big SUVs, which clearly have different recycling profiles. Maybe let the market figure out the finer details through negotiation.
Okay, and then Article 22, the cross-border mechanism. This seems to be the real lightning rod.
Oh, absolutely. This is causing major pushback. The proposal tries to set up a system to figure out who pays when a car is first sold in, say, Germany, but ends its life years later in Poland.
Sounds complicated already.
Incredibly. The stakeholders, manufacturers, member states are saying the proposed mechanism is unworkable. They foresee nightmare scenarios of complex money flows across borders, huge admin costs, unreliable data, political fights.
So lots of bureaucracy, maybe not much environmental gain.
That's exactly the criticism. ACEA, the Manufacturers Association, basically called it pointless bureaucracy and wants it deleted. And the member states themselves in the council working group seem to agree, calling it unjustifiable and saying it needs to go.
Yikes. So if Article 22 is DOA, what's the alternative people are pushing for?
The strong consensus from industry and countries like the Netherlands is forget the complex cost formula for now. Focus on the real problem. Traceability.
Knowing where the cars actually are.
Exactly. Mandate robust information exchange between countries. If member states reliably share data on registrations and when a certificate of destruction so is issued, you can manage things much better.
How so?
Well, EPR fees could potentially be linked to where the car is registered now, not where it was first sold. Sharing COD info ensures cars are properly deregistered everywhere, and it means linking up national databases with existing EU systems.
Like customs and vehicle movement hubs.
Precisely. Multiple sources hammer this point home. Traceability and information sharing are the absolute foundation. Without that, no financial responsibility system, especially cross-border, can work properly or fairly. It's the key.
It really sounds like step one have to be just knowing where things are and making sure they don't disappear illegally.
You got it. And speaking of clarity, another issue raised is just confusing definitions within the regulation itself.
Oh. Like what?
Well, terms like placing on the market versus making available on the market. What's the exact difference? Is one the first entry into the EU, the other a national sale? It's not totally clear. Or the definition of producer. It includes those acting on a professional basis. But what does that mean? Should there be a minimum number of vehicles threshold? Or just clarify, it means, you know, registered importers, distributors.
And you're saying even manufacturer isn't explicitly defined?
Bizarrely, no. Which seems like a pretty fundamental oversight given how central they are to the whole regulation.
Huh. Okay. And back to that scope expansion. Motorcycles, buses, trucks, trailers. We know it's phased in, but what does it really mean for the dismantlers, the ATFs?
For the authorized treatment facilities, it's a big deal. These aren't passenger cars. They're often way bigger, heavier, need specialized lifting gear, different depollution techniques, just physically need more yard space.
And different skills, I imagine.
Absolutely. Staff need training. It means potentially significant investment in infrastructure for these ATFs to handle these new vehicle types safely and meet the regulations requirements.
So talking about ATFs, they really are the linchpin in this whole thing. What are their biggest concerns based on what we've seen?
Sources like the European Recyclers Associations, EGARA and 4RS, they really stress the ATF's central role. They do the collection, the deregistration, the depollution, dismantling, selling parts, everything.
And they need certain conditions to make it work.
Yeah, they have a list of needs. They want assurance that parts with market value aren't artificially blocked from sale. No legal restrictions if someone wants to buy it.
Okay, fair enough.
They need fair payment for handling materials that cost more to process than they're worth currently. They absolutely need good, usable information from the manufacturers. And crucially,
digital locks.
That's a big one they mention. They need protection from manufacturers using software or digital pairing to prevent perfectly good use parts from being installed in another vehicle. That kills reuse.
And what about illegal operators?
Huge issue. They need a level playing field, protection against competitors who just ignore the rules, dismantle cars illegally, pollute. The proposal mentions inspections for ATFs every 10 years, but the sources say that's nowhere near enough. Authorities need to actively hunt down the illegal operations.
That point about digital locks is fascinating and really hits the used parts market directly, doesn't it?
It's a major barrier. The regulation wants more reuse, but then you have these technical roadblocks. Another issue is competition from undocumented parts, potentially cheaper, maybe from stolen cars or illegal yards, which legitimate sellers struggle against.
But on the flip side, online platforms are boosting the legitimate market.
They are, yeah. Platforms like Ovoco or even general ones like OLX in Poland are apparently creating significant demand. OLX is reportedly investing a lot in their auto parts category, so it's easier for ATFs to reach a wider audience.
Did the sources offer any practical tips for dismantlers looking to sell more used parts, maybe even internationally?
Oh, absolutely. Some really concrete advice came through, like providing details about the donor vehicle. That can boost sales 10-15%.
Makes sense. People want to know the history.
Good photos are critical. Plain background, multiple angles can lift sales 8-10%. Cleaning the parts helps too, can get 10-20% higher prices.
Seems obvious, but probably often skipped.
Right. Detailed descriptions with technical keywords are vital for search. And offering a warranty, even just 6 months, especially on expensive stuff like engines or ECUs, big sales increase, maybe 10% higher average value. And smooth shipping and returns are key free options really help.
That's incredibly practical stuff. Okay, let's switch to insurance. The Polish Insurance Chamber, PIU, had worries about deciding when a car is scrap versus repairable.
Yes, this is a tricky one. The criteria in the proposal for deeming a vehicle end of life after an accident are described as complicated, ambiguous.
Leading to arguments.
Potentially, yes. Different interpretations, disputes between insurers, repairers, owners. It's supposed to be assessed by insurers or independent experts, but who settles disagreements isn't clear. And this matters a lot, as insurance pays for, what, 60-70% of repairs?
So, if these unclear rules are strictly enforced, what could happen to insurance costs?
The PIU source flagged several risks. It could kill the salvage market, you know, selling damaged repairable cars, which affects how total losses are calculated. It might reduce used car supply overall, pushing up prices.
Oh, interesting knock-on effect.
Insurers might have to pay to transport more cars designated as ELVs. It could even, paradoxically, increase theft if demand for cheap undocumented parts rises, and just more admin costs, more disputes because of the mandatory assessments and unclear rules.
And that financial responsibility point, the Polish example from 4S, really showed how the burden can fall back on dismantlers, right?
It did. Despite the rules saying producers should pay, in Poland, the practice often involved producers just contracting with a few stations, potentially on bad terms, maybe linked to that cartel behavior. And crucially, since 2015, the dismantlers in Poland are the ones penalized if recycling targets aren't met. Before that, they got aid.
And the new EU proposal doesn't stop that.
As written, it doesn't seem to explicitly prevent national systems where the financial risk effectively lands back on the treatment facilities, not the producers. It's a gap.
Okay, let's briefly jump outside the EU. What about the US market? Huge number of cars there.
Massive. Something like 290 million vehicles, and they're getting older. Average age hit 12.6 years recently. They have about 10,000 recyclers doing around 12 million cars a year, achieving a pretty high recycling recovery rate, around 86%.
Similar challenges to Europe.
Some overlap, some different pressures. Things like tariffs are pushing up new car prices, making people keep old cars longer. Repair costs are soaring up 27% in 3 years, partly due to complex tech, parts prices, labor shortages.
Wow, 27%.
Yeah. Parts shortages are a big headache, too. Tariffs on imported parts are messing with supply chains. And they're grappling with EV battery end of life, who's responsible is still being figured out. Though one source did call the U.S. a leader in the practical circular economy approach for cars.
Interesting. And Japan. They have unique demographic issues, right?
Very much so. Declining birth rate, aging population, it's expected to really shrink future car ownership. Plus, a cultural shift among younger people away from owning cars.
Why that?
Mix of things. Economic pressures, high car prices, more people in cities using public transport, rise of car sharing, maybe just different interests competing for their money and time.
So fewer cars being bought, eventually meaning fewer cars being scrapped.
That's the projection. Interestingly, desire to drive is still apparently high, but it's the feasibility that's the issue for many young people. So yeah, the expectation is fewer ELVs down the line.
How's the Japanese recycling industry adapting?
Through consolidation, some closures, but also some really neat innovation. One standout example is the Kitakyushu Ecotown.
What's that?
It's like a dedicated industrial park for circularity. Recycling businesses are clustered together, and the waste from one becomes the input for another. Zero emissions is the goal.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, like small dismantlers cooperating to share expensive machinery, or plastic waste from cars being collected and turned into new resin right next door. It's industrial symbiosis in action.
Very cool. Any other Japanese innovations?
Yes, the concept of the urban mine. Japan has amazing metals refining tech, partly from its history of gold mining. Now they're using it to pull precious metals out of old products, including cars.
Like gold from electronics.
Exactly. One specific example found about 67 euros worth of gold in just 35 grams of a certain type of engine sensor made around 2010.
67 euros in one tiny part. That really flips the script on what's valuable in an old car.
It completely does. It suggests maybe the biggest untapped value isn't just the steel and aluminum, but these tiny traces of high-value materials hidden in complex components. Recovering them needs new tech, new thinking.
That urban mine idea is fascinating. Okay, let's try and pull this all together. Looking across all these sources, what are the main tensions around this EU proposal?
I think the core tension is between the really ambitious goals, deep circularity, high recycled content, better treatment, wider scope, and the, let's say, messy realities on the ground. The practical challenges for manufacturers redesigning cars, suppliers sourcing materials, dismantlers needing investment and clear rules, insurers dealing with ambiguity.
So if we boil it down, what are the absolute must-haves for this regulation to actually work based on what everyone's saying?
Number one has to be clarity. Clear definitions, clear rules. Avoid ambiguity. Number two, feasibility. Are the targets, especially for recycled content, actually achievable without causing massive disruption? That needs careful thought.
Okay, what else?
Functional EPR systems, making sure producers genuinely pay and organize things fairly. Protecting the legal operators, the current enforcement ideas against illegal activity seem way too weak according to the sources.
And traceability.
Absolutely critical. That came up again and again. Effective traceability and mandatory information sharing across the whole life cycle, across borders, it's seen as the fundamental enabler for everything else, especially making any kind of cross-border financial responsibility workable. Without it, it just won't function.
And connecting this back to the listener, someone thinking about their next car or getting repairs or insurance, how does this affect them?
Well, it could change the cars we buy, what they're made of, how repairable they are. It could change the cost and availability of spare parts, especially used ones, if it genuinely boosts that market and deals with things like digital locks.
So potentially more sustainable, maybe more repairable cars.
That's the aim. Ultimately, it's trying to shrink the environmental impact of driving by keeping materials circulating, reducing waste, and cutting our reliance on digging up new resources. It's a huge transformation attempt. So, wrapping up this deep dive, it's clear this is a hugely complex balancing act the EU is attempting. Promoting circularity, boosting recycling, expanding scope, while navigating economic pressures, market forces, and big enforcement gaps.
Yeah, and that theme of information and traceability really seems central. Getting accurate data flowing from design through use, treatment across borders, it's not just a detail. It feels like the foundation everyone agrees is needed for this to have a chance.
Absolutely.
Which leaves us with maybe one final thought to chew on, that urban mine idea from Japan. Is the real future value in old cars, not the tons of steel, but the grams of gold, palladium, rare earths, hidden inside complex bits? And if extracting that value needs totally new tech and collaboration, what does that imply for how we need to design cars differently from now on, and how the entire recycling industry might have to reinvent itself?